John 13, from verse 31. When he had gone out, Jesus said, "Now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God is glorified in him, God will also glorify him in himself, and glorify him at once. Little children, yet a little while I am with you. You will seek me. And just as I said to the Jews, so now I also say to you, where I am going, you cannot come. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another just as I have loved you. You also are to love one another. By this, all people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, where are you going?" Jesus answered him, "Where I am going, you cannot follow me now, but you will follow afterwards." Peter said to him, "Lord, why can I not follow you now? I will lay down my life for you." Jesus answered, "Will you lay down your life for me? Truly, truly, I say to you, the cock will not crow till you have denied me three times. Let not your hearts be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, I would have told you that I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and will take you to myself, that where I am, you may be also. And you know the way to where I am going." A good word from the Lord this morning. Now, I want to start this morning by talking about moments of glory. What of your moments of glory when I mention that phrase? What flashes through your mind? The times that you've shone the most brightly. In my own life, I look back at the spring of 1999 and I think about the Raynham Country Fair. Don't laugh. Where my band, Mitochondria, we were playing outdoors to a festival crowd of about 60 people. And that's not funny. And we played this one song that I'd written, and we played it so tightly with such energy. As far as I was concerned, I might as well have been headlining Glastonbury. My time had come. It was my moment to shine. And we got a check for £40 to split between the five of us, so it was lucrative as well. Other more conventional moments of glory might spring to your mind too. Leonardo DiCaprio finally getting his Oscar. Perhaps Queen Elizabeth II becoming the longest reigning British monarch of all time. Or Johnny Wilkinson and that drop goal. Do you remember that? Brilliant moment. Moments of glory, moments of splendor, moments of individuals shining the brightest. In verse 31, at the beginning of our reading, Jesus says, "Now is the Son of Man glorified." Son of Man was a name that Jesus used to talk about himself. And so we have in view here, as we get into this passage, Jesus's moment of glory. The Son of God from eternity come down to live with man on earth, the creator, the sustainer of all life, the performer of astounding miracles, he who controls the elements, he who can cast out demons, is now most wonderfully, most brilliantly, most praiseworthily, most illuminatingly going to display his glory that the world might see it and worship. Now is the hour of Jesus' glory. And what is he going to do? How is he going to show his brilliance? And perhaps many of us have an idea of what is coming. And it is not the script that most of us would have written. You see, what Jesus is about to do is not something that we would normally or naturally associate with glory. It is not the sort of glory, I'm guessing, that you or I would easily pursue. But let's talk about it. Let's talk about Jesus' moment of glory. Look at the Bible, Verse 31, when he had gone out, that he refers to Judas. Jesus, throughout chapter 13, had been hinting that he knew one of the disciples was going to betray him. And as the chapter goes on, it becomes increasingly clear that Jesus knows it will be Judas who will give him over to his enemies. In the end, Jesus says to Judas, "What you're going to do, do it quickly." And Judas, rather than denying it, he stands up and he leaves the group and he walks out into the night. And when Judas left, verse 31, then Jesus said, "Now is the Son of Man glorified." It is a shame, actually. There's a word that didn't make it into our ESV translation that really should be there. So if I was reading from the NASB, which is a very literal translation, it reads this, just one word different. "Therefore, when he had gone out, Jesus said, 'Now is the Son of Man glorified.'" And that "therefore" is important because John is saying that now Judas has gone to do this bit of business. Now that he's gone to cut a deal with the men who would kill Jesus. And now that that course of action that will culminate in Jesus being crucified the next morning has been set in motion, well, now then is the time for Jesus' glory to be displayed. It's something that's happening at the end of verse 32, at once. And what the gospel writer is trying to show is the unsurpassable significance of this moment in history. After all, the moment of glory, which is now displayed, is not merely the glory of a man. It is the glory of God shining most brightly. See verse 31, "Now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him." The supreme being in the universe, God himself, is going to shine most brightly, but he is going to do so in this hour of death and of darkness. Note, by the way, that we see again, actually, we haven't picked up John's gospel for a long time now, but as Jesus has been teaching throughout John's gospel, he and the Father are one. And one's glory is necessarily glory for the other. You see, verse 32, "If God is glorified in him," Jesus, "God will also glorify him," Jesus, "in himself," God. In other words, what God the Son is doing on the cross the next day will bring ultimate glory to God the Father. And God the Father will reflect that same glory, will share that ultimate glory with the Son, with Jesus. Jesus is going to the cross. And this is somewhere, verse 33, that the disciples cannot go. Jesus must do this job alone. They cannot die for sins. They cannot pay the ransom that means that people will be saved for eternity. They cannot pave the way to heaven. They cannot prepare a place for God's own people to be with him. So no, Jesus must go to the cross alone, but by going to the cross, he will receive all glory. And that is what he is saying. Jesus' disciples didn't want Jesus to go to the cross alone. They didn't want him to leave them. They didn't want him to die. Now, they would never have chosen this path to glory for their master and king. But they needed to hear, just as we do, that Jesus' death wasn't a shame and it wasn't a terrible tragedy. It was the most definitively lovely, wonderful, and glorious moment of history. It was unrepeatable. He did what we all need, but nobody else could do. He went to the cross, and the cross was his hour of glory, not his hour of defeat. Now, this is the moment the whole gospel, the whole Bible story has anticipated. His greatest victory in what looked like his greatest loss. We'll unpack why it's his greatest victory in a minute. First of all, in verses 34 and 35, Jesus follows up a theme we touched upon last week. In fact, he's said similar things throughout John's gospel. "A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also are to love one another. Now, there is a small problem because this isn't actually a new command. This isn't the first place in the Bible that God's people have been commanded to love each other. For instance, you could go back to Leviticus 19, verse 18, and God says, "You shall love your neighbor as yourself." They've already been instructed to love each other. So how is this a new commandment? And well, it is not the instruction that is new. What is it? It is the example. "As I have loved you," says Jesus, "that is how you should love one another." Jesus, who is in the process of loving his friends to the end, to his very last breath, Jesus, who is willing to give up everything for his friends, even to die for them, well, that is how we ought to love one another. Jesus' own people, his people saved by his work on the cross, from this point are to be marked by a love that is modeled on Jesus' own self-sacrificial love for us. There is an expectation that we ought to pursue love and service of God's household in a way that will most certainly necessitate shows of weakness and suffering. But aren't we shown by Jesus that what looks like weakness to the world is not necessarily so? For Jesus, what looks like weakness, he is walking towards his death, ends in glory. And in a very real way, the same is true for his people too. Joined with Christ, we are to follow him now in humble service and sacrificial love, but we will also follow him to his Father. We will also get to bask in his glory. There's a famous old prayer book that I love called The Valley of Vision. I don't know if you've come across it. There's a great CD of songs from it actually as well that Sovereign Grace make. But the prayer that it's named after, The Valley of Vision, it says, amongst other things, "Let me learn that the cross precedes the crown. Let me learn that to walk weakly and humbly now ends in glory for the Christian." Following Jesus' path to the Father. Which leads us on nicely to our second point this morning. And that is this: why is the cross glorious? Why is the cross glorious? Well, the answer is it prepares a place for us with God. It prepares a place for us with God. Verses 36 to 38, Peter, bless him, says to Jesus, "Look, tell me where you're going, because I want to come with you." Peter thinks he's ready, he's able. He can walk Jesus' roads. He has what it takes to go where Jesus is going. But of course, he doesn't. He can't go where Jesus is going. Jesus, the perfect man, the perfect Son of God, is the only person qualified to go to the cross. And it will be exposed now that Peter cannot go to the cross, that he needs Jesus to go for him. So in response to Peter's assertions, Jesus says two things to him, one that must have been overwhelmingly comforting and one that must have been very hard to stomach. Let me deal with the latter first. Verses 37 and 38, "Peter, you won't follow me as far as you think you can. And you won't lay down your life for me." It's a noble claim, but I know, says Jesus, that you're not going to do it. In fact, Peter, as I am hanging up on the cross tomorrow, you will deny me three times. You will tell people you don't even know me. And what a blow for Peter. Despite his bravado, Jesus knew his weakness. Jesus knew that when confronted, he would be ashamed. Jesus knew Peter would let him down. And friends, I have to tell you this morning, Jesus knows what you are really like. Despite what you present on Sunday, he knows what is going on. He knows how you and I are weak. He knows how you and I are liable to turn our backs on him when the going gets tough. That's what the Bible calls sin. And Peter's sin, our turning our backs on God, well, that has spoiled creation. It has ruined this world. It's ruined relationships with people and, most significantly, with God. It has meant that we can't be in his presence, in his company. But it is at the cross, that most glorious moment of history, where Jesus is going to fix the consequences of Peter's sin, of our sin. Yet Peter cannot go with Jesus to the cross because Jesus is going to the cross for Peter. And that is the hard news that Peter needs to hear. But then look at the comfort. Look at verse 36. You cannot follow me now, says Jesus, to the cross, but you will follow me afterwards. You will follow me afterwards. Well, to where is the question? Verse 1 of chapter 13 signposted that for us. Where is Jesus going? The time had come for Jesus to depart out of this world to the Father. Jesus is going back to the Father, but he's going via the cross. Now, Peter, you cannot go to the cross. Only Jesus can solve the problem of sin. But you can follow him afterwards. You can go where he is going. You will be able to stand at the side of God in heaven. And this is all because of this moment of glory as Jesus dies on the cross. All because Jesus is going to the cross for his friends. And this is what Jesus expands on in verses 1 to 4 of chapter 14. Except that Jesus is now not just speaking to Peter, he's speaking to all of his gathered friends. He says, let not your hearts be troubled. Believe in God, believe also in me. The disciples were troubled, they were worried. We're supposed to feel that here. Of course they were anxious. Jesus, a number of times, has told them that he will only be with them a little while longer. But this guy was their leader, their teacher, their life. He was everything to them. And this evening, Jesus has shifted that narrative up a gear. I'm about to leave you, he says, and you cannot come with me. But we always go with you, Jesus. Their enemies are pressing in. Opposition is becoming more vocal. The desire of the religious leaders to see Jesus knocked off is becoming more apparent. And amongst all of that, they have got one of their special little band of brothers declared to be a traitor. One of their little group of brothers in Christ has sold them out. He's given Jesus up. And then to add personal insult to general injury, Peter has been told by the Lord he loves so dearly that he's going to lose the will to stand by him. Instead, he's going to reject him, deny him. And that must have cut Peter to the bone. For these guys, if you're a Lord of the Rings fan, it's a little bit like when wise and powerful Gandalf is killed. Yeah, hope seems to be gone. The darkness seems to be winning. That little fellowship, well, it seems for a while like they should just give up and go home. Yeah, how can we continue without him? So, yes, the disciples were troubled. What are we going to do when Jesus is gone? How will we continue when he leaves us, when we are left alone and we are proved to be weak and disloyal? And Jesus tells them that whilst he may not be physically in the room with them, he is still the answer. What does he say? He says, believe in God, believe also in me. Believe in me, says Jesus. Now, why should they believe in Jesus? What are they believing in? Well, verse 2, he says, in my Father's house there are many rooms. In other words, there is a lot of space for people to be with God. gods. Many will dwell with him. You don't need to be worried, my friends, about making the cut, he says. There is a lot of room, but still they must be asking, how do we know we're going to get in? Especially poor Peter, with what has just been shown up about him. Well, the answer, Jesus says, it's because I go to prepare a place for you. Jesus says, I am going to make sure there is a room for you in my Father's house. Your place with him, with God, is secured through me. I'm going to prepare you a place. And of course, we know that Jesus is going where? He's going to the cross. Jesus is going to the cross. He's going to prepare a place for them. He's going to the cross to prepare a place with God for his friends. On the cross, Jesus will die. But he will not die a meaningless death. He will die a glorious death. He will die the death that his friends ought to die because of their sin. He will face God's hostility that ought to be directed at us, that ought to bar us entry into God's house. Jesus goes to the cross for his friends, in place of his friends. He pays the price. He bridges the gap. He makes a way. He prepares a room for every one of his friends in God's house, in God's company, in God's presence. The disciples were troubled, but Jesus wants them to understand the glory of this moment. You see, the disciples were weighed down with the burdens of today, but Jesus wants them to see that there is a bright tomorrow because he is going to the cross. The disciples can only see that Jesus is going to leave them, but Jesus wants them to know that he is coming back to get them. You see that in verse 3. And they will be where he will be. The disciples can only see loneliness in the days ahead, but Jesus is telling them he is going to the cross so that he can take them into God's presence, which is where they will be forever. Jesus' moment of glory is not a self-interested glory like me fronting my band at the Raynham Country Fair. It is a selfless glory that loves and serves and scoops up his friends with him. Jesus' moment of glory is not a short-term moment of glory like Johnny Wilkinson's drop goal, which will be forgotten in 100 years' time. And the consequences of this moment of glory are not short-term either. Johnny Wilkinson won the World Cup for England, who then lost it 4 years later. What Jesus won on the cross was salvation, a place for God, a place with God for his people that will never be taken away. The effects of the cross will resound throughout eternity. It will never end. Jesus' moment of glory on the cross prepared a place for his friends with God. And if it's okay, just before we finish, I want to take a couple of minutes to speak about us. Because I reckon that there are a number of us here this morning, perhaps particularly, or perhaps more in general, feel their hearts troubled. We will face moments of seeming darkness, just as the disciples did. We will feel the crises, the troubles of this life. Perhaps that is because of the attacks of the enemy, the same enemy who under God's sovereign hand worked through Judas, who will do everything he can within his limited power to discourage us, to weaken our loyalty to Christ, to do what it takes to take our eyes off the gospel so that we can only see the immediate troubles of this life. Perhaps this moment of seeming darkness is because we're struggling with sin and cannot seem to vanquish it. Like Peter, we may be determined to walk loyally with Jesus, but so often when push comes to shove, we find ourselves turning our backs on him. Perhaps our hearts feel troubled simply because we know we belong somewhere else. We wish we had the concrete reassurance of the physical Jesus before us. We long for the day he comes back. We long for the day when we get to be in heaven, perfected, dwelling finally and fully in the presence of God. And sometimes it just doesn't feel like we'll make it. How are we to go on as we wait? And Jesus would say the same thing today to his friends, as he said to his friends then. Believe in God, believe also in me. Because at the cross, Jesus says, I have prepared you a place in my Father's house. We need to lift our hearts and our heads to an eternal perspective. This life's little glories and its little darknesses will come and go. But the glory of the cross will remain forever. Struggling, suffering, trouble is a present reality as we live on in a world ruined by sin. But this ruined world will not last forever. And Jesus has encouraged us to look forwards to when we will reside with the Father in heaven if we are his. Sin abolished, the consequences of sin abolished. Revelation 21, no more suffering, no more pain, no more crying, no more death. Moreover, we will continue to be, in the words of my dearest hymn, we will be prone to wander. Lord, I feel it. Prone to leave the God I love. Like Peter, we will continue to be plagued by our own sin as we live in this world of sin. But, as Jesus so lovingly reminded Peter, this does not exclude Jesus' own from a place with the Father. So believe in him. We don't go to be with the Father because we meet God's standards. We go to the Father because Jesus went to the cross and prepared us a place with him. And lastly, as we wait, as we long for that day when freed from sinning, we shall see his lovely face. When that feels like it will never come, listen to Jesus' promise. If I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and will take you to myself, that where I am, you may be also. Let me pray that those words stick with us this week. Father God, thank you for Jesus. Thank you that he was willing to give up on the sort of glory that we expect of people, to do something more glorious, more wonderful, that he would die in our place, that a place would be prepared with us in your house. Father, please help us to understand that this morning. Please help us to adore Christ for his brilliance displayed at the cross. And please reassure us and comfort us, if we are your people this morning, that our place is secure, and that eternity is coming.